This is Primal Potential, and I am your host, Elizabeth Benton. Through education, motivation, and implementation, we will bridge the gap between knowing and doing so we can master fat loss naturally and help you reach your highest potential. Let's get started.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal Potential Podcast. I am Elizabeth Benton. I hope you're having a great day. Back in episode 481, I asked you guys two questions. The first question was, what would you rather hear about today in this episode? And I gave you a couple of options. One was the microbiome, and the other was cholesterol, blood lipids, and the microbiome won, so we will do that. For those of you who suggested cholesterol, my sense from your comments is that maybe you have not yet listened to episodes I've already done on cholesterol. I know there are a ton of episodes and most people haven't started at the beginning. So I wanted to take a second to shout out those episodes on cholesterol, blood lipids, dietary fat, etc. I will also link to them in the show notes. So first and foremost, we're talking about the microbiome today. For those of you who really wanted to talk about cholesterol today, I'm going to link to Q&A 7 way back when, which is about why cholesterol is not the culprit when it comes to vascular disease. More recently, episode 424 is all about dietary fat and blood lipid concerns. So cholesterol, HDL, LDL, triglycerides, that's episode 424. Also episode 75, how much fat is too much fat, and cholesterol factors into that equation. So that's Q&A 7, episode 424, and episode 75. There are a handful more, but those are great ones to start with. The other question I want to touch on before we dive into the microbiome, I asked you guys in episode 481, what else I can do to help you, how I can be more transparent, how I can connect with you in a way that helps, that drives you forward. And I want to bring up two specific responses before we dive into the science stuff of the microbiome, which I'm super excited about. One of my master's club clients, in response to that question, what can I do better? How can I help you more? She said she misses my blogs where I used to share my daily food and workouts. So for months and months, Monday through Friday, on the blog, I would post what I ate and my daily workouts. There are two reasons I stopped. The first one is pretty straightforward. Not that many people read the blog. So there's that. I don't want to put my time into something that isn't adding a tremendous amount of value. If it was adding a tremendous amount of value, more people would read it. That's just one reason. Here's the bigger reason that I stopped doing that. A lot of people thought that me sharing how, what, and when I eat, and how and when and where I work out, how I push my body in the fitness sense, was a prescription. Like, you should do that. And that's not what it was. First and foremost, my workouts are not beginner workouts. They're not. I have been working out for a long time. So anybody looking at my workouts going, oh my gosh, I couldn't do that. I couldn't either when I started. I didn't want to participate in frustrating people or making people feel like they can't make a change because they can't make my change. Because it's just not true. That's not real. Same thing with food. A lot of people were looking at what I eat and giving comments like, I could never eat that. I couldn't be that strict, or I would eat what you eat and I'd be hungry all day long. You don't eat enough. But it's not about you. You don't have to eat what I eat. You shouldn't eat what I eat. Our bodies are different. Our hormones are different. Our activity levels are different. Our baseline is different. The way I eat now is not only the way that makes me feel my best, it's also a direct response to my hormonal challenges with things like Hashimoto's and estrogen dominance. my metabolic challenges. I eat the way I eat for my body and my lifestyle and my preferences, and it reflects where I am on my journey. If I looked at the way I eat now a few years ago, it would seem extreme to me. It's not where I started, it's where I am now. I felt like sharing that level of detail on the blog was distracting and discouraging more people than it was helping. I spent time every single day saying to people, you don't have to eat what I eat. You can eat more. You can eat differently. You don't have to eat Brussels sprouts. You don't have to do CrossFit. It's not about what I do. And I don't want to participate in somebody feeling discouraged. And also, I don't want to participate in the comparison approach. I eat more than you do. I eat less than you do. I couldn't eat that much at one sitting. I couldn't eat that little at one sitting. I couldn't work out. What I do is not what you should do. What you should do is based on your goals, your baseline, your body composition, your hormones, your microbiome, your starting point. What is an improvement for you? The middle ground for me in knowing that it helped some people is that I share it on my Instagram stories. Over on Instagram, there's two different kinds of posts. There's your regular feed, which is what shows up below the profile, all the little squares. And then there are stories, and stories only last for 24 hours. The adjustment I made was sharing what I eat and posting most of my workouts in my Instagram stories. They're only there for 24 hours, and you see more than just one moment in time. That was the adjustment I made. I'm open to doing it differently again, but I wanted to just respond with why I stop doing that. If you're curious about food or workouts and what I do, first and foremost, check yourself. Is it because you're thinking that you should do what I do? Because that's not necessarily the case. You should do what is an improvement for you. Are you trying to get ideas? That's great. Follow me on Instagram and you can see that stuff. The other piece of it is that Primal Potential isn't the Elizabeth Benton show. I don't want that because I don't think it's best for you. There are a lot of people with similar social profiles that want to be the star of their brand, and good on them. I don't. You are the star of Primal Potential. This is about you. I don't want to do anything that is a distraction from what you can do today to take great care of you. And I always have to find that balance. Right now, that balance looks to me like sharing my meals and my workouts on my Instagram stories. So there's that. The other comment I wanted to address in this feedback that I asked for in episode 481, and then I promise we're going to dive so deep into the microbiome. I was asking what I could do differently, more of, less of, better, etc. And one particular person said, sometimes in my direct episodes, my stronger episodes, the more punchy, bold, motivational ones, she said, it sometimes seems like I'm belittling people's choices. I really, really value that feedback, even though I know it's not right. So I know I'm not belittling people. I've never had a sense of wanting to belittle or a sense that someone is not doing what they should be doing. I don't think that way. But what is real is that this person feels that way. That is very real. And so I value that feedback. Here's what I know. That person doesn't know me or hasn't listened to enough episodes. What is true is, at my highest weight, I refused to get on a scale. I was so big, I wouldn't even go to my doctor's appointments because I didn't want to know how much I weighed. I would binge daily. I remember buying, and this didn't just happen once, but I remember one particular time where I bought a box of ice cream sandwiches at the grocery store. I ate several on the way home, and then I was so disgusted with myself and I didn't trust that I could have them in the house without eating the rest of them. I threw them in the outside trash, which was also because I didn't want my now ex-husband to see them in the house or see them in the inside trash. Then an hour later, I went and ate them out of the outside trash can. The reason I tell you that is that I won't belittle your choices. I've been there. I'm not a person who judges overeating or binging or inconsistency, because that's how I lived most of my life. There's no judgment. What there is, and what is behind the fire and the passion, is compassion and desire to help you break through. I intentionally vary my tone on episodes because there's a time and a place for different kinds of messages, and everybody responds differently. Some people love the passion and the fire. They need it. And other people take it really personally, like this individual did. And not that they thought I was belittling them, but they take it as a belittling message. And it's just not. It's just not. I intentionally have some more mellow, emotional episodes and some more fiery, passionate episodes because everybody needs something different. I want to reach as many people as I can. And also, even an individual who prefers maybe the science-based episodes or the more mellow-toned episodes has a moment where they need that fire, where they need that passion. What I need you to know from the bottom of my heart is there is no disrespect. It breaks my heart when I see people judging others, what they eat, their size, their choices. It breaks my heart. So if you sense that from me, understand that it is your perspective and not my intent. And I'm going to continue to vary my tone because those fiery episodes that get some people to say, "You sound so harsh," also get other people to take immediate action. So I think there's a time and a place for both. The reality is, if you're not in a day, in a moment, in a space in your journey where the tough talk episodes speak to you, just skip them. Just skip them. I'm not performing. This is very much reflective of my personality. Some days I'm much more chill and lighthearted. And other days I am on fire to help you. And that comes through in the messages. That's just real life. That's just me. And it's okay if my style isn't right for you. And it's okay for you to acknowledge that some days it's not the right day for the message. And it's also okay for you to look at yourself and say, do I need to check my own thoughts and feelings about this message? Is my sense of the message more a reflection of me than it is a reflection of the messenger? All right, that's that. The microbiome. I love this science stuff. I really do. And I have done a few previous episodes on the microbiome. So if you are hoping that I'm going to talk about probiotic supplementation today, I am not. But I have before. So if you want something that I'm not delivering in today's talk on the microbiome, I will link to those past episodes, specifically episode 55 and episode 432. I'll link to those in the show notes. If you want more of my opinion on probiotic supplementation or a different angle on the microbiome, I've probably got you covered in episodes 55 and 432. One of the things I always like to point out when we start talking about the microbiome, and we'll talk about what it means and what it doesn't mean, the first thing I want to establish is that it really freaking matters. Too many people think that it doesn't matter, that it's just about what we eat and how we move. But the microbiome matters in a massive way for weight, for health, for immunity, for energy, for metabolism, for mood. We have more bacterial cells in our bodies than we do human cells. We cannot dismiss this. We have trillions of bacterial cells in and on our body, trillions. We have approximately 10 times more microbial cells than we do human cells. For that reason, they matter a lot. They can and will make or break our health, every aspect of it. Like I said, digestion, immunity, metabolism, mood, it is all influenced dramatically by our microbiome. I want to debunk this notion that our health is all about our genes and therefore we can't do anything about it. It's simply not true. It's not as simple as saying, I have this gene and I don't have this gene, and what is written on my genes is the way my health will be. It's not just about what genes are present in your body, it is about what genes are being expressed. Your genes are simply a set of instructions. That doesn't mean the instructions are being carried out, that they're being carried out correctly. Something has to take action for the instructions to be carried out. Otherwise, you have genes that could never be expressed. Gene expression is what matters, not just your genes as they exist. Gene expression is about if anything is being done with the instructions. We're seeing the scientific community shifting away from the idea of just genetics to what matters more, which is genetic expression. And we have a ton of control over which genes are expressed and which aren't, which genes are turned on, which genes are turned off, which genes are turned up, being loudly and significantly expressed, and which genes are being turned down. You know what has a huge role on genetic expression? Which genes are being expressed and which ones aren't, which instructions are being followed and which ones aren't, our microbiome. Our lifestyle has a huge impact on genetic expression. And it's not just our human genes that we need to be concerned about, friends. We have about 20,000 human genes in our bodies. 20,000. We have millions of microbial genes, and the same thing is true with the microbial genes. They are also expressed or not expressed, turned up or turned down. There is so much we can do to optimize this and change our health. You've probably heard before that all of us are essentially genetically identical. We don't look the same. Our health is not the same. We don't act the same. But over 99.9% of our human genes are identical. Very small differences. What is dramatically different are the genes of our microbiome. They're about 95% different versus the human genes, which are about 99.9% the same. Only about 5% of our microbiome is the same person to person. There is very little human genetic variation between us, and there is massive microbiological difference between us. And this is where it's not in our genes that differentiates our metabolisms and our energy and our mood and our cognitive abilities. The differences between us come largely from our microbiome. And the amazing thing about that is that we can have a huge impact on it, both positively and negatively. And this is one of the reasons that there is no one-size-fits-all approach. If there's one common theme in this podcast, it is do what works for you. Eat foods you love that love you back. And while there are some universal principles about not overeating and not eating when you're not hungry and not eating processed foods and minimizing toxins, there's also a tremendous amount of variability because we have different hormones. We have differences in our microbiome, different goals, different preferences. This is why it's critically important that we listen to our bodies, that we not simply blindly do what somebody else is doing or what we once heard was great. Listen to our bodies so we can do what feels great for us, what works for us, and avoid what doesn't. The other thing about the microbiome, and we're going to get into the specifics of what it does and how it works, is that it changes. So many people get frustrated by the fact that what they were doing a year ago that worked doesn't work for them now. Well, no kidding. You are different now. Your microbiome has changed, which means your metabolism has changed, which means your hormones have changed. And that is why we always have to be paying attention to our bodies, to what works for us and to what doesn't. So let's get back to the basics. What exactly is the microbiome? We understand that it's important, but what is it referring to? It's not just bacteria. That is where I think most people oversimplify it. Your microbiome refers, yes, to bacteria, but also to viruses and also to fungi. They aren't just taking up space either. They don't just live there off of us. They have function. They are important. They are doing things that contribute to or take away from health. The things that they do prevent disease or create disease, and we have a huge influence on that. When we think about the microbiome, this collection of bacteria and viruses and fungi, one of the things that is very important is diversity. You want to have a wide variety. Think about it like an ecosystem. You want a diverse ecosystem to cover your bases. And when we look just at diversity, the broad variation of strains of bacteria, different types of viruses, different types of fungi, more diversity is associated with health. When we look just at the diversity of the microbiome, having a more diverse scope is associated with less obesity, less disease, general overall health. Less diversity is associated with obesity and with disease. We can contribute to the diversity with things like a wide variety of fruits and vegetables in our diet. We can contribute to diversity by cutting out the things that kill off the diversity, like sugar, like trans fats, like toxins that are found in our water. So we don't have to be taking 77 strains of probiotics. That's not it at all. There are ways to introduce this microbiological diversity and also ways to make sure we're not killing off huge parts of it with the common culprits of processed foods, trans fats, overeating, stress, toxins. The microbiome and the diversity, it varies based on the region of the body. So there are specific microbes that are found in your mouth. And those microbes are less likely to be found in the intestines. The ones that are in your mouth are the ones that need oxygen to live. And the ones that are in the gut are the ones that thrive without oxygen. The ones on your skin do better with less moisture than the ones, say, in your mouth, or for ladies in your vagina that prefer more moisture. So your microbiological diversity varies very much based on the region of your body. The composition of the mouth differs from the intestines, differs from the skin, differs from your feces. It's different depending on where it is. One factor in this, where it all begins, is when we are first developing our microbiome. So when babies are in utero, before they are born, that is essentially a sterile environment. In utero, you don't really have a microbiome. And it's initially populated during birth. Because the composition of the microbiome varies dramatically based on regions of the body, and this is step one of your lifelong microbiome, babies that are born vaginally are populated, their microbiome, the starter pack of their immune system, is very, very different than babies who are born via cesarean section. What we see is that the diversity and strains of bacteria that populate the microbiome in babies born vaginally represents the bacteria from the vagina, which is very, very, very different from babies born via cesarean section. And they develop their immune system and get that starter pack of the microbiome from, what do you think? The bacterial cultures found most often on the skin. Very, very different. We begin sterile when we're born, and our microbiome is first formed through our birth experience. In fact, vaginal microbial transfer is becoming a very real thing in babies that are born via cesarean section because we understand the importance of that initial microbiological exposure and how that is really a primer for health and a primer for immunity. Not to say there's anything wrong with being born via C-section. That is absolutely a necessity and the right choice for, this isn't like a commentary on the right way to be born versus the wrong, not at all. But there is tremendous value in that initial population of the microbiome, which is why a lot of people that have to deliver via C-section or choose to deliver via C-section are essentially, simply put, this is an oversimplification, are swabbing their newborns with swabs from the mother's vagina to make sure that you get that microbial transfer. The biggest influences on our microbial composition are in the first few years of life. It begins with how you're born, right? Vaginal birth versus C-section, and then it continues breastfed versus bottle fed, how many times you receive antibiotic treatment in the first few years of your life. We tend to have the microbiome change very little after the first few years of life. There is so much we can do to change it, but generally speaking, the biggest changes happen in those first few years of development of your microbiome. I think that's important to know because so much of it is established then, but we can optimize it. It's important for parents to know. It's important for people who might someday become parents that is a huge factor in the development of this thing that's going to play such an important role in metabolism, in immunity, in inflammation, mood, cognitive abilities, you name it. When we look at the microbiome, what is critically important is knowing what's there and what are they doing. Do we have the diversity? What's present? Which strains of bacteria are here, which aren't? Which viruses are here, which aren't? Which fungi are here, which aren't? And what are they doing? What I find really fascinating is researchers can look at the microbiome without ever seeing the individual they are looking at, and with 90% accuracy, just looking at a sample of the microbiome from an individual, they can tell with 90% accuracy if that person is lean or if that person is obese. What is additionally fascinating is if they're looking just at the genes, you can only tell with 60% accuracy. So looking at the genes alone, it's not much better than a wild guess. Looking at the microbiome with 90% accuracy based on your microbiological composition, researchers can tell if you are lean or obese. I'm making these points just to really emphasize why we can't dismiss the microbiome and our role in taking great care of it. If you give kids antibiotics early in life, they are significantly more likely to be obese than children who were not given antibiotics early in life. Again, this isn't a case to avoid antibiotics. This is proving the point that what we do with and to and for our microbiome really matters. We have to look at who's there and what are they doing. Some of the microbes produce vitamins that can't be produced without those bacterial strains. So some of our bacteria create vitamin K, which is super important for heart health and circulation. Some of our bacteria produce vitamin B12, a huge component in energy. They are building blocks for proteins, for amino acids. These microbiome components, bacteria especially, can manufacture amino acids. These amino acids are the building blocks of proteins that help us to recover, to repair, that support our immune system, that allow us to resist infection. So the amino acids and certain vitamins are actually created by, manufactured by bacteria. They also metabolize medications. Guys, this is so huge. If you have dysbiosis, or basically an imbalance, suboptimal composition of your microbiome, it changes the way your medications are metabolized. If you do not have the bacteria that are needed to metabolize a certain medication, you won't benefit from that med. This is where science is going. To say, all right, when we put somebody on a prescription medication, we need to know their bacterial composition. We need to have a good sense of their microbiome. Is there something they need to cut out of their diet? Is there something to add? Do they need to be taking a probiotic supplement? What do they need in order to be able to metabolize these medications? Because the bacteria play a role in that. That's why some meds work for some people and they don't work for others. A lot of it has to do with your microbiome. Nutritionally, it gets super interesting. You've probably heard me talk before about how some fibers that we consume are insoluble. So there's soluble fibers and there's insoluble fibers. And when we talk about insoluble fibers, basically they can't be digested by our human digestive enzymes. So we think, well, what do? They just pass straight through. It certainly doesn't look like they just pass straight through. Well, these insoluble fibers are food for the microbes. And there's a term, MAC, M-A-C, which stands for microbiota accessible carbohydrates. Microbiota accessible carbohydrates. And essentially what that is referring to are these components of foods that can't be digested by your human digestive enzymes, but they are specifically nourishment for the microbes. And you might be thinking, all right, so I'm feeding the bacteria. Is that good or is that bad? But that's only one part of this process. There is a byproduct of feeding these microbes that is a huge component of health. So what happens is that these microbes consume these fibers, these MACs, microbiota accessible carbohydrates, and they aren't just fed, they then produce something as a byproduct. A metabolic byproduct, a metabolite of the consumption of the fiber. I'm going to put this really simply because I don't want anybody to get lost in the technical detail here. Essentially, the microbes eat the fibers and then they produce something as a result. It's kind of like you eat, you go to the bathroom, right? There is a result of the consumption. Well, these microbes eat the starch and then they produce byproducts that are health promoting, like butyrate. So the microbes eat the starch, and one of the byproducts of this process is the production of short chain fatty acids. These are a huge component of health. If you don't have the right microbes, or if you are not giving your body those insoluble fibers that come from vegetables primarily, you don't get this short chain fatty acid production. You don't produce butyrate. These byproducts, these short chain fatty acids, are super important for health. They are a huge component in cellular signaling, in the ability of your body to send things like satiety signals. I'm done. I'm full. I don't need to eat more. Butyrate, which again is a byproduct of these microbes consuming these starches, they create short chain fatty acids. Butyrate is one of them. Butyrate protects your gut lining so that toxins can't get in and cause inflammation. the gut lining, when it becomes permeable, it's the starting point for all autoimmune conditions. It's the starting point for inflammation that can impact your heart health. It's the starting point for all sorts of mental health disorders. Butyrate protects your gut lining. It protects against the permeability of your intestines. Butyrate also has a huge role in insulin resistance. When you lack butyrate, either because you lack the microbes that digest the starch that produce the butyrate, or because you are not feeding those microbes because you're not eating enough of this wide variety of vegetables with the starches in them, then you are more likely to be resistant to insulin, which is a huge component in diabetes and in obesity and in lack of hunger and appetite regulation. Butyrate's also a big component of energy. Butyrate is the primary energy source for the cells that line your colon. So butyrate protects against colon cancer. You need these microbes, and you need to fuel them well so that they can produce these metabolites that protect your health. There are other short-chain fatty acids that are produced as byproducts of this microbial feasting on these starches in your gut. Butyrate's one of them, but there are others like acetate, and the other short-chain fatty acids that are produced have different functions: mental health, anti-inflammatory. The cool thing about acetate, one of the other short-chain fatty acids produced by this microbial feasting in your gut, acetate can cross the blood-brain barrier. There's not a lot of things that can cross the blood-brain barrier, and this short-chain fatty acid, acetate, that is a byproduct of what your microbes are doing in your gut, acetate crosses the blood-brain barrier, which has a big impact on inflammatory diseases of the brain. There is a big, undeniable connection between nutrition and the microbiome and your brain health. Higher short-chain fatty acid production in the gut, higher short-chain fatty acid presence throughout your body is associated with lower body weight, more weight control, whereas lower short-chain fatty acid production, either because of dysbiosis or this imbalance of bacteria or a dysfunctional microbiome, but also maybe not feeding them the right way because nutritionally you're not optimized, this lower presence of the short-chain fatty acids is associated with higher body weight and less weight control. And a lot of that function, a lot of the impact of short-chain fatty acids being produced and the connection to body weight is related to the messaging between your intestines and your brain. So when you are producing these short-chain fatty acids because the microbes are being well-fed in your gut, that gets signaled to your brain to say, we're giving our body what it needs. The microbiome is being fed. Things are good. Your gut tells your brain that, and the feedback mechanism is less hunger and more satiety because your body is getting what you need. The other big part of the microbiome is that not only do they feast on these resistant starches, on these insoluble fibers and produce short-chain fatty acids, the microbes in your gut are also a huge part of harvesting nutrients from the food that you eat. So your microbiome in large part determines, are you getting more energy out of extracting more energy from the food you eat or less energy from the food you eat? Are you able to metabolize the components of the food you eat, or are you having a sensitivity? You know how we talk about oxalates? We talked about oxalates when we talked about nuts and nut butters, but oxalates are also present in certain vegetables like beets and spinach. And when we talk about oxalates, we talk about, you know, folks that have inflammatory conditions, whether it's GI conditions or autoimmune conditions, might need to minimize their consumption of oxalates. Well, that depends on your microbiome. There is a specific bacterial strain that is required to break down oxalates. And if you don't have it, or if you don't have enough of it, it's called Oxalobacter, then you can't break down the oxalates and they can become toxic. But if you do have enough of that strain of bacteria, then you can enjoy nuts and beets and spinach without having them become problematic and trigger inflammation. And that's just one of thousands of examples. There are some different tests that are available, and I'm going to talk about those on another episode in my experience with those. But short of that, because people are like, well, how do I know? The biggest thing that you need to do is listen to your body. Symptoms like bloating, headaches, cravings, hunger, excess weight, stomach pain, diarrhea, whatever it is, inflammation, joint pain, you name it. These are signals of things going on in your body, and you have to begin to remove certain triggers and adjust accordingly. It's about your body. It's not just I eat paleo or I eat primal or I'm a vegan or I'm a vegetarian. There are nuances that when you are paying attention to your body, you will begin to see, to experience, and you have to be paying attention. You have to be paying attention. The food part of this goes beyond producing short chain fatty acids or not. Because people are like, well, butter has butyrate, so I don't need to worry about the microbes producing butyrate because I can just get it from butter. Yes, butter does contain butyrate, but that's just one part of the equation. It's also about how efficiently are you able to harvest the energy from the food that you eat. Because if you are eating and eating and eating and eating, but you lack the biological diversity to get the nutrients from the food, then your body is not getting the signals that you are fed, that you are well, because you really haven't been. Because the nutrients haven't been harvested from the food because you lack the bacterial diversity to do that. Some bacterial strains help to reduce inflammation. Some help to lower cholesterol and LDL. Some of them have a huge role in brain function. In fact, there's something called antibiotic-associated psychosis. Antibiotic-associated psychosis. Google it. I didn't make it up. Essentially, what this means is when you kill off certain strains of bacteria as a result of antibiotic treatment, you can get a little nutty. Now, it stops when you get off the antibiotics because our bodies have a really brilliant way of keeping us healthy and keeping us well. But dysbiosis or bacterial imbalances have a tremendous impact, not just on nutrition, but on mood and emotional control. 95%-ish of your body's serotonin. Serotonin is one of those feel-good neurotransmitters that has a huge impact on mood. 95% of your body's serotonin is in your gut lining. So if there is a microbial issue, if there is inflammation, which is often triggered by this dysbiosis, this bacterial imbalance, serotonin production is going to be negatively impacted. There is a huge role in longevity. We see certain diversity and microbiological health in those who live over 90 than we see in those who die young. Bacterial imbalances are associated with ulcerative colitis, with asthma, with Crohn's disease, with allergies, with diabetes, heart disease, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, obesity, depression, irritable bowel, cancer, chronic fatigue, celiac disease, Parkinson's disease, cirrhosis, autism, lupus, arthritis. Are you convinced yet? These bacteria and viruses and fungi influence every aspect of our lives. And I know that most of you are probably thinking, okay, so tell me what to eat and tell me what products to take. What we need to eat and if we need to supplement is going to be different for every single one of us. However, there are some specific things we can all do, and these things will make the biggest difference. And they are all related to minimizing the damage we cause to our microbiome. All right? Before you worry about, well, should I be eating spinach and beets and nuts, or do I need to take probiotics? Begin with reducing the damage you do to your microbiome. Number one, cut back on sugar. And you might be thinking, well, I don't eat that much. If you are concerned about your microbiome, do what is an improvement for you. Don't argue for where you are right now. Improve from where you are right now. Cut back on sugar. Ready for this next one? It's huge. Do not discount it or say that you can't. Reduce stress. Calm down. Stop getting so worked up. Meditate. Sleep more. Work out more. Stress is toxic to the microbiome. Stress is toxic to the microbiome. We all have improvements we can make here. Do not get caught up on, should I be eating spinach? Should I be supplementing with probiotics? Reduce stress. There are things that we are all doing that are causing damage, and reducing that damage is going to have a much bigger impact than adding some probiotic supplement. Reduce stress. Really challenge yourself to say, how can I do that today? What will I do this week to take that seriously? Eat less sugar in all forms. Cut back on stress. Pay attention to your body. What makes you feel great and what doesn't? Do less of the things that either upset your stomach, give you reflux, make your joints hurt, make you feel tired. Listen to your body. Learn your body. Don't worry about figuring things out in theory and having an exact science understanding of what's going on. Listen to your body. It doesn't lie. Stop overeating. Don't eat when you're not hungry. It's not good for your microbiome. We all have somewhere, just from the few things I mentioned, that we can start. We could make a case for things like kimchi, right? Fermented vegetables or probiotic-rich yogurt, things like that. But the reality is there's not a one-size-fits-all solution. And like I mentioned, there are some different tests and things that you can take, but I'm going to do a separate episode on that after I get my own results back, because I'm not going to recommend anything without not only having my own experience, but really having done the research about what's real, what's true, what's fad, what's not. Back when I worked in the supplement industry, we developed a genetic test to look at basically what was written on your genes. And it didn't tell a whole lot about genetic expression. It gave recommendations for what you could do to optimize genetic expression based on your present genes. But I, as a part of that process, I took all the similar tests on the market. And I wanted to see where there was variation, where there were positive, where there were negatives, where things didn't make sense. And so I want to really do my homework in the same way related to the microbiome before I go into specific recommendations there. But the specific recommendations are still clear. Don't get hung up on what you don't know or can't do. Focus on what you can do. And every single one of us can make an improvement with how much we eat. And I'm not saying everybody needs to eat less, but there's very few people who don't have room for improvement in terms of eating when they're not hungry, because that's not good for the microbiome. Everybody has improvements on paying attention to their body. What makes me feel great and what doesn't? What are the things that make me feel more tired when I eat them? Or what are the things that make me feel more bloated or less bloated when I eat them? Stress. Every single one of us can have improvements on stress. And even light exposure has an impact on the microbiome. Because remember, a huge part of a microbiome lives on our skin. So making sure that you are minimizing exposure to artificial light after the sun goes down, that is part of it as well. Reducing toxic exposure. Get a water filter. I've done an episode on that, and I will link to that in the show notes, because that is a huge part of it. Get a water filter. The more toxins we consume, and water is one of the most common ways that we consume it, the more damage we do to our microbiome. So again, there are so many things that we can do here that is an improvement for us. Dial back processed foods. Do not consume trans fats. Really emphasize whole foods, but don't overeat them. Don't eat when you're not hungry. Cut back on sugar. Reduce stress. I know I sound like a broken record, but what I want to avoid is people feeling like, I don't know enough to create an improvement here. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Absolutely, you do. And I promise you that as I go through some of the options for a deeper understanding of your individual microbiome, we will talk about it here. Of course, we will talk about it here, but every single one of us has a starting point right now related to toxic exposure, related to water filtration, related to stress, quality of food, reducing processed foods, reducing sugar, overeating. We all have a place to start. One place to start related to toxins in food. I want to throw out this opportunity again because it is brand new. I think I've only mentioned it two or three times here on the podcast, if that. I know we talked about it at length when I was with my master's club over the weekend. Thrive Market recently launched meat boxes, which I wish there was a better term for that, meat box. Like I sort of cringe a little bit every single time I say it. But basically they have partnered up with really quality meat producers like grass-fed, antibiotic-free. And that's a huge part of it. Because think about it. If you are consuming meat from animals that have been treated with antibiotics, not only do they not have the bacterial diversity that would benefit you, but traces of those antibiotics are in your system and wiping out your microbiome. That's so major. So maybe one of your starting points is turning to this, and I know a barrier can be cost, which is why I mentioned Thrive Market. Their meat boxes are not only high quality and will really support reducing the damage you're doing to your microbiome when you're not consuming quality meat products, when you're consuming low quality meat products, but also can add to the bacterial diversity when you're consuming, say, grass-fed versus grain-fed. You're adding to that biological diversity that is so, so, so important. So check out, they have like fish boxes, they have chicken boxes, they have combination boxes. I've really enjoyed everything that I've tried from there. If you give them a try, you can save an extra 25% and get free shipping on your first order and get a free 30-day trial membership when you go through the URL thrivemarket.com/primalpotential. thrivemarket.com/primalpotential. The quality of the food you eat has a huge role on your microbiome. Lastly, I want to remind you guys that the waitlist is now open for the fall 2018 12 Weeks to Transformation group. So you can head over to the show notes page, primalpotential.com/482, and get on it that way. Or you can go to primalpotential.com, hit the Work With Me tab at the top of the page, jump on it that way. But the waitlist is now open. So if you want to learn more about it, if you want to have one of the first opportunities to join up when we kick off in the fall, make 2018 end on an amazing note, hop on that wait list. I will chat with you guys soon. If you have more questions about this, ask first and foremost. Head over to the show notes page, primalpotential.com/482, and you'll find all the episodes that I mentioned. Water filtration, if you're curious about the cholesterol stuff we didn't talk about, you can get those links as well as past episodes I've done on the microbiome and probiotic supplementation and all that stuff over at the show notes. And you can hop on the wait list while you're there. I'll chat with you guys soon. Have a really great day.
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Primal Potential Podcast, where my goal is not to inform you, but to transform you. And if you would like to receive free motivation and strategy and recipes, workouts, meal ideas every week right to your inbox, just text the word PRIMAL to the number 44222 or go to primalpotential.com/join. It's a great way to get the tools, the strategies, and the practical implementation assistance that you need to create your own transformation between podcast episodes. Just text the word PRIMAL to the number 44222 or go to primalpotential.com/join. See you there.